We're here at Meteor Crater, Arizona. This is the most well-preserved meteor impact site on the planet. It is huge. It's two-thirds of a mile in diameter. And the meteor that made this impact is supposed to have been like 160 feet in diameter, and it slammed into the Earth at such an incredible speed that there was just a massive explosion that created this tremendous crater. All throughout the ancient world, it doesn't matter what culture you look at, Babylon, Egypt, India, China, even the Native Americans, people have always taken a great interest in astronomy. And they used astronomy to tell time, to tell the seasons, to navigate and find compass directions, etc. And we in the modern world, we don't really spend that much time looking at the stars, because if we live in giant cities like, say, Phoenix or Los Angeles, you can't really see a lot of stars at night because of all the light pollution. But if you think about it, before that technology existed, anyone could just walk outside every single evening and just see thousands and thousands of stars in the sky. So people spent a lot more time looking at that than we do in the modern world. One of the things that's pretty cool in the night sky is when you actually can see a meteor enter the atmosphere. I've seen this a few times up close. One time I was on a long drive where I was driving from Phoenix to LA, and I was in Quartzsite, and I was just about to cross that mountain range right before you get to Blythe, and a meteor entered the atmosphere, and I could tell that it was very close to me because it was on my side of the mountain range. So it was like less than 20 miles away, just this burning fiery ball entering the atmosphere, and it was an incredible sight. Now, because of how amazing the sight of a meteor entering the atmosphere is, and because of the fact that a lot of ancient pagan religions had their worship based on star constellations and astrology and things like that, a lot of cultures throughout history have actually worshipped meteorites. Now, let me give you some examples of this. There's the Red River meteorite. This is in north central Texas. And there were at least three Native American tribes that worshipped the Red River meteorite, including the Comanches. So in the 1800s, when white settlers came along and they saw this meteorite, it was like 4 feet by 2 feet. And it was made out of like 90% iron and 10% nickel. Well, when they saw it, they mistakenly thought that it was solid platinum because it was really shiny and beautiful. And so they thought, man, this thing's worth a fortune. Like, it's this giant gold nugget. So they actually stole it from the Indians and smuggled it out of there. The Indians were fighting them for it and everything. They got out of there with it. They ended up finally shipping it to New York City, where they figured out that it was just a giant hunk of, you know, 90% iron, 10% nickel. So it was comparatively worthless to, you know, platinum. But here's the thing. Even though in modern times a giant hunk of 90% iron, 10% nickel is pretty worthless, okay? Back in the ancient world, this was a very precious metal. And before smelting of iron was common, you know, this was just a ready-made, pretty pure source of iron, you know. So back when they're working with bronze and in the so-called Bronze Age, you know, this is this superior metal that fell out of the sky. So you can see how they could worship meteorites, and they would, you know, just find this metal to be even more precious than gold, this special kind of iron. And even after they knew how to smelt iron, still this 90% iron, 10% nickel mixture was a unique kind of iron that had special properties that could be hammered and shaped into weapons and so forth. In fact, King Tut's tomb contained all these treasures of gold and precious stones and things like that, but it also contains an iron dagger that has since been tested and found to be 90% iron, 10% nickel, which proves that it's from a meteorite. So this is a gift that was fit for a king because of the fact that it's from this rare precious metal that fell out of the sky in the form of a meteorite. So we talked about how the Indians worshipped the Red River meteorite. Well, another prominent example of this is the Temple of Artemis, which was constructed around the 8th century BC. It was destroyed and then later rebuilt. And the rebuilt version was actually referred to by Herodotus as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. So this is a major temple. Now, it was based around the worship of a meteorite all the way back to the 8th century BC. And actually, we have a record of this in the New Testament in Acts chapter 19. Now, in the King James Bible, it doesn't use the term Artemis. It calls her Diana, Diana of the Ephesians, because Artemis is the Greek name of this goddess, and then Diana is the Roman name. So here's the scripture from Acts chapter 19, verse 34. But when they knew that he was a Jew, all with one voice about the space of 2 hours cried out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And when the town's clerk had appeased the people, he said, "Ye men of Ephesus, what man is there that knoweth not how that the city of the Ephesians is a worshiper of the great goddess Diana and of the image which fell down from Jupiter?" So we see that they're saying, well, everybody knows that. I mean, what man doesn't know that? So this is just common knowledge that not only is Ephesus worshiping the goddess Diana, but that they're worshiping the image that fell down from Jupiter. So why do you think they said that the image fell down from Jupiter?
Because it fell from the sky, most likely.
Yeah, because it's a meteorite, right? So when it says it fell from Jupiter, it's not saying, like, you know, the planet Jupiter. They're talking about Zeus, right? Because the, you know, the Greek god Zeus, the Romans call him Jupiter. So they're saying, like, oh, this goddess image of Diana fell down from Jupiter because they saw a meteor coming into the atmosphere. It crash landed. Then they went to the site of ground zero of that impact, and they find this meteorite, and it's this incredible metal, this special alloy, you know, 90% iron, 10% nickel. And so they thought, oh, this is a sacred, divine object that fell out of the sky. So this is another example of pagan worship of a meteorite. And we even see evidence of it in the Bible, where we see that this image fell down from Jupiter, right? Mm-hmm. It's obviously a meteorite. Another example of this is around 200 BC, when the Romans were fighting against Hannibal. There was this thing called the Aedean Mother. It was this cone-shaped meteorite that was worshipped in central Turkey, and they actually brought it from Turkey to Rome, built a temple for it in Rome, and supposedly they had to do this in order to defeat Hannibal. You know, this is the only way they're going to win, is by having this cone-shaped meteorite that they worshipped brought to Rome. Then around 218 AD, there was a Roman emperor that was named El Gabalus. And this guy, his reign was really short-lived. He only reigned for like 4 years. But this guy, El Gabalus, he was named that because he was a priest as a child of this sun god called El Gabal. And what they actually worshipped in the temple of this sun god, El Gabal, was a cone-shaped meteorite. And then when he became the Roman emperor, he brought his cone-shaped meteorite with him to Rome and set it up as, you know, a god in the Roman pantheon. And not only that, but he actually elevated it to be the highest god in the Roman pantheon, even above Jupiter or Zeus. And so for 4 years in the Roman Empire, the number one god in their pantheon was basically a meteorite that they were worshiping. In fact, Herodian said of the El Gabal meteorite, quote, "This stone is worshipped as though it were sent from heaven," because the meteorite itself had all these little pointy protrusions from it. So they saw this as like sun rays, that it was like an image of their sun god, and it fell out of the sky and so forth. Now you say, well, you know, does anybody worship meteorites now? Well, in fact, there are 1.6 billion people on this earth that bow down toward a meteorite actually 5 times a day. Now, they might not be bowing toward a real meteorite, but they think they're bowing toward a meteorite because the black stone in the Kaaba in Mecca, which is where all of the Muslims point their prayers to, is said by them to have fallen from the sky, that it came from the sky. And it probably is a stone from a meteor crater. Now, here's the true story about the Kaaba. It was already a pagan shrine long before Muhammad came along and had his supposed visions. When he got there, it had 360 idols in it. One of them was this meteorite known as the Black Stone. Now, it may not actually be a meteorite. That's what people believed that it was. Islamic tradition has it falling out of the sky to show Adam and Eve where to build an altar. And then supposedly later, Gabriel brought it to Abraham and Ishmael, and they built the Kaaba, supposedly. But really, the Kaaba is just a pagan shrine filled with idols. When Muhammad showed up, it had 360 idols in it. So he cleansed it of all those idols, but he kept the one meteorite that's known as the Black Stone. Now, it may not actually be a meteorite. It may actually be what's known as impactite. When a meteor crashes into the sand of a place like Saudi Arabia, there's going to be a tremendous explosion. It would melt that sand together with material from the meteor itself, and it creates some new materials and some new strange rocks called impactite. So that we don't know what it is because no scientist has ever been able to examine the thing. But anyway, he kept this thing around and just kind of made a place for it in Islam. And when they pray five times a day in Islam, they actually point themselves toward that meteorite, okay? Every mosque has a marking in it that shows them where to point their prayers toward Mecca, and they're pointing it toward the Kaaba. And the cornerstone of the Kaaba is the so-called Black Stone, which is this meteorite or impactite or whatever it is. Not only that, but another one of the five pillars of Islam is the pilgrimage to Mecca, and the purpose of that pilgrimage is so that they can walk in a circle around the Kaaba seven times, and their goal is also to kiss the Black Stone. But there's so many people there, it's difficult to do that. So it's sort of like a mosh pit when they're trying to get close enough to kiss the Black Stone. There are even Islamic traditions that say that, you know, in the ancient past, the Black Stone had eyes and a mouth and it talked, or that in the end times, it's going to have eyes and a mouth and it's going to say things, it's going to judge people, and all kinds of wild things that they believe about it. But they definitely bow down to a meteorite, pray to it, kiss it, make a pilgrimage to go see it. So this is just a continuation of early pagan practice that Muhammad just built into Islam. Much like the Roman Catholic Church took a lot of pagan Greek and Roman mythology and mixed it with biblical Christianity. When the Bible describes the second coming of Jesus Christ, it talks about the sun and moon being darkened and the stars falling. Obviously, that's not referring to the literal stars, but it's actually referring to what we would call shooting stars. So those are actually meteors being referred to as stars because we call them shooting stars. Listen to Matthew 24:29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. That's Jesus Christ. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. But not only will there be meteors showering down at the second coming of Christ, afterward, when he's pouring out his wrath upon the earth, the Bible describes one tremendous meteor that crashes into the earth known as wormwood. That's in Revelation chapter number 8. Let me read it for you. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. So this meteor that crashes into the earth is given the name of Wormwood. And actually, the word Chernobyl is Ukrainian for wormwood. I know that sounds hard to believe, but literally, I fact-checked it multiple times, and Chernobyl means wormwood. Now, what was Chernobyl? A nuclear disaster that ended up spilling out contaminants and radiation into the environment. Well, think about the recent Fukushima incident, where there was an earthquake in Japan, and it sent this great tidal wave crashing in, and that power plant at Fukushima started leaking all that radioactive waste. There are power plants all over the world that are storing radioactive nuclear waste that has to be cooled all the time. You know, it's in a certain containment facility, and if that containment facility loses power, then those temperatures will rise, that stuff will start melting through the walls, through the floor, and you have a major disaster. Now, if a meteor were to crash into the earth, call it wormwood, right? Crashes into the earth, that's going to create all kinds of earthquakes and tidal waves all over the planet. And think about all the nuclear power plants that are all storing this radioactive junk. And when the tidal waves and the earthquakes happen, those things are going to start to leak out as those containment facilities begin to fail. And all of that radioactive junk is going to get into the fresh water supply. Because remember in the scripture, it talked about the rivers and fountains of waters being made into wormwood, being made into Chernobyl, right? Being made radioactive. And many men will die from drinking that contaminated radioactive water, because one third of the fresh water on the planet is going to be turned into a radioactive wormwood. Okay, so people are going to be dying from that. And so you can easily see how Revelation chapter 8 could be literally fulfilled by a meteor strike, given the fact that you have all of these nuclear power plants all over the world. So in conclusion, all cultures in the ancient world were big on astronomy. They observed and documented many meteors and meteor showers. Pagan cultures all over the world worshipped meteorites. Most notably now, Islam is a religion with 1.6 billion people bowing down toward a meteorite every day, or at least what they think is a meteorite. Meteorites have deposited metal alloys on this earth that were way ahead of their time, and at some points in history were even worth more than gold because they were used for special jewelry, tools, amulets. And that particular alloy could only be gotten from a meteorite. The New Testament records the image of Diana as supposedly falling from Jupiter. So it's very likely to have been a meteorite. And also, the Bible prophesies that at the second coming of Christ, there are going to be meteors coming down. And then there's going to be one tremendous meteor known as Wormwood that will most likely destabilize nuclear power plants all over the world, causing one third of the fresh water supply to be contaminated, poisoned, and become deadly. Thanks for watching this first episode of Ancient Astronomy. We're hoping to do a lot of other future episodes, all filmed in 360. We're going to do one on how ancient Greeks measured the earth with surprising accuracy. They actually measured the globe around 250 BC. Hoping to do an episode on navigating by the stars, episodes about the planets, especially Venus, an episode about astrology. I mean, there are just all kinds of subjects that we'd love to cover, tying in ancient astronomy with the Bible and trying to get as much great 360 footage as we can for these. So stay tuned for more episodes. God bless you. Have a great day.